Hello and welcome to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst, AFC North lead writer at BleacherReport.com and Pro Football Focus fantasy football contributor. I'm joined this week, like I am every week, by my co-host, Brian.
Hey, what's happening?
So, we're back after a two-week hiatus here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. We have a guest this week, by the way. We have Rumford Johnny from Two Mugs Fantasy Football coming up. You know, longtime listeners of the podcast are probably quite familiar with Mr. Rumford Johnny, as he is one of our Hall of Fame guests and he frequently joins us here.
Yes.
And the Super Bowl is over. The 2013 NFL season came to a close Sunday night with the Seattle Seahawks crushing the Denver Broncos 43-8.
Yeah, it was, I'd say, difficult to watch for the lay fan, if you will.
Yes. I mean, I saw a lot of people complaining and saying that it was a kind of a boring game, that routes are kind of boring. They can be. I don't think that any Super Bowl route is boring, though, because these are the two supposedly top teams in the league. One from the NFC, one from the AFC. So it's always interesting to see how they match up. And when there's a blowout, you know, it kind of tells you a couple things. And, you know, it had been 10 years since we'd had a true blowout in the Super Bowl anyway. So we might as well have one. And you learn a lot about these two. You learn a lot about the teams involved in a Super Bowl blowout. You learn a lot.
I was able to find it compelling or interesting throughout the game. I mean, maybe the very end of the fourth quarter, it was like, okay, you know. But like,
this is over, so let's go on with it.
But yeah, like the majority of the game, it was compelling just the fact that, you know, that's the greatest offense ever.
Yeah, basically.
You know, statistically speaking, and yeah, Seattle's, you know, a great defense. Probably, as we were discussing earlier yesterday, whenever, probably the best since the Ravens 2000, mm-hmm. All hearkening back to the 85 Bears and things like that. They're kind of on that next level defense, but still to see them just own the best offense ever, you know.
They didn't score until right at the very end of the third quarter with that touchdown, the 2-point conversion, the Broncos there. It's incredible.
It kept it interesting to me just because it was kind of like, watching a horrific accident. You can't quite look away. You know, you're just like, God, can it really be this bad? I mean,
yeah, can this really happen?
Right.
Is this real life?
I didn't expect this at all. You know, I guess my gut, I was leaning Seattle, but I thought Peyton could do some Peyton stuff and potentially win the game and whatever. But, like, you know, certainly never saw anything like that.
No. We'll discuss the Super Bowl a little bit more with Johnny here in a few minutes. Just first, you know, a couple of basic news items. The Cleveland Browns finally have rounded out their coaching staff. As you may recall, they hired Mike Pettine to be their head coach. He was the former defensive coordinator of the Buffalo Bills. They also brought in Jim O'Neill, who's been with Mike Pettine for years, dating back to the New York Jets. He is their defensive coordinator. They hired Dowell Loggins from the Tennessee Titans to be the quarterback's coach. They have an offensive coordinator finally. That's Mike Shanahan, or Kyle Shanahan. Jeez. No, Mike. Not the Shanahans. Just Kyle. Most recently, of course, of Washington. And they rounded out the offensive coaching side of the ball with Andy Moeller and Wilbert Montgomery as O-line assistant and running backs coach, respectively. Both those guys were with the Ravens coaching staffs. So finally that's taken care of. They had a press conference today being Thursday, to introduce all of the new coordinators and assistants. So the Browns can get moving forward on trying to build something out of what they got there. And the Atlanta Falcons released cornerback Asante Samuel and linebacker Steven Nicholas, starting the first wave of postseason releases. I'm sure that we'll see a couple trickling in here and there for the next couple of weeks, especially after the scouting combine. because a lot of, you know, GMs and coaches discuss, you know, making deals and trades and things like that extensively, right, as well as agents talking to coaches and owners about extensions and all that kind of stuff. So that stuff should pick up later on in the month.
Yeah.
So that's about it for a little bit of league-wide news and notes. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will be joined by Rumford Johnny from Two Mugs Fantasy Football. We're going to talk about all kinds of things going on around in the league, talk about the Super Bowl, a little bit of draft talk, a little bit of NFL media kind of blah, blah, blah. We're gonna jump around a little bit, talk about all kinds of things. So stay tuned for Rumford Johnny right after the break.
Yes.
Our guest this week here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast is Rumford Johnny from Two Mugs Fantasy Football. He's our Hall of Fame, all-pro, repeat guest, and he's back just as we are back after a two-week hiatus.
MVG.
Yeah.
Nice. I appreciate that introduction, and of course, as you know, the studios, the F-Ball studios have... Once again, you guys have outdone yourselves. I'm on a chaise lounge made of comprised entirely of profiteroles, which is delicious and kind of comfortable, actually.
Well, they're a little cushiony.
Yeah, they got a little cushion to them. So.
Yeah, they're like a sort of like you know, Craftmatic adjustable bed. It's really conforming to my different curves, and it's very, very comfortable.
Well, we had room for that after we took out the triple fountain. Yum.
the triple fountain. First of all, triple fountain. Yum. I just want to say this to you, for you guys out there, that if you were lacking, vision of what was going on the television when you hear somebody saying triple fountain yum, and you just weren't in the same room at the same time, you really would be conjuring up images of maybe a potential, like a Ron Jeremy film, if you will, something rather grotesque. So, which would totally make me not want to go to one of these restaurants that sort of has this gluttonous fountain of grossness and corn syrup endlessly churning down to like make us incredibly fat as we already are anyway in this nation. But yeah, triple fountain yum just kind of really encapsulates how morbidly obese this country has become. I don't know. It's kind of hysterical.
Triple fountain yum doesn't even like make any sense either. Like, it's not even like a real noun or anything. It's just like, what are you describing exactly? What is triple fountain yum? They just gave up.
I tell you, when I was in my 20s, and that was quite some time ago, guys, you come home late at night, and maybe you do something really grotesque, like you're kind of hungry, and you see maybe in the refrigerator some whipped cream and some chocolate syrup, and you just kind of open your mouth, and you just pour it right into your face, and you're like, that's as close to triple fountain yum as you're going to get. And,
yeah.
And then you pass out, and you wake up, and you're like, what the hell did I do to myself? But that's probably as close as I'll ever get to something like that, I think.
Well, you can. There's other ways to cover things in chocolate.
Yo, there you go.
Yeah.
There are
other ways to do that other than going to a Golden Corral and snuffing up the germs of other human beings at the same time.
I have Cinemax. I know what you guys are talking about.
So on to football.
There you go.
how about that Super Bowl, Johnny?
It was great. I'll tell you what, I'm not a crazy degenerate when it comes to betting on sports, but I dropped some coin on the Seahawks. I have to let you guys know, and I'm very, very happy to say that I did. I made a little bit of money off the Seahawks. I just thought that line was absurd to me. I mean, I know a lot of people were kind of getting excited about the Broncos, and I thought, what historically – and not to knock Peyton Manning because he had an amazing season.
Yeah.
Okay. But what in the postseason really made you feel like he was going to come out and dominate this defense? I didn't feel that at all. And I kind of felt almost like awkwardly cocky about betting on the Seahawks. I thought, man, this is – I feel –
This doesn't seem right. It seems too easy.
It did, and they were getting points. I mean, it just seemed weird to me. And the fact that they blew them out was really – I didn't think that was going to happen. I thought they were probably going to win by a touchdown and, you know, with the 2.5 or whatever they were getting. I thought, you know, that was a nice cover, but I had no idea. And, look, it goes to show you that a team – when a team is really dominant on defense and you have a pocket passer, whether it be Peyton Manning or Tom Brady – you know, one of the old school type quarterbacks that just going to sit there and go through the progressions, you can screw them up if you rush three or four and just wait, because, you know, if they want to get rid of that football quickly, you know, again, a strict old school pocket passer really wants to get rid of that football early because they don't want to get hit.
Right.
Because they're not going to run all around the, you know, they're not going to scramble like Russell Wilson does or Colin Kaepernick or Cam Newton. They're not going to be able to evade that rush and make people miss and extend plays. They're going to sit there and hope that internal clock doesn't run out and they're going to get, you know, not get creamed. That's exactly what happened with Peyton Manning. He got hurried. He, you know, you look at all of the, you know, the teams that were successful in the past, even with the Patriots of old, really, how they got to Peyton Manning was that same way. They just rushed so many you know, on the defensive line and linebackers, and they just kind of drop back and they just caught you. Stay with your assignments in whether it be in zone. And I think they play mostly cover three anyway in Seattle. And by forcing him to hold the football longer than 3 seconds, that's exactly how you get to Peyton Manning. You make him do what he's most uncomfortable doing, holding on to the football, because he knows in his head, he's a computer. He's like, okay, 1, 2, 3, boom, I'm gone. And I let go of the football. If you make him hold on to that football longer than that, then chances are you're going to probably be successful against him. You're going to make him do things he doesn't want to do, and that's exactly what happened in that game.
Yeah, but I also think it was a matter of, you know, he couldn't get it out fast enough just because their rush was so effective.
They were on him so quickly. I mean, even if he did have 3 seconds to throw, you know, he was lucky to even, you know, have that amount of time. You know, there's a guy in his face within 3 seconds. So it's you know, it's not even him holding the ball for 5 seconds, you know, on every drop back.
Sometimes
there was, but it was just like, and that's what really impressed me. I mean, I've watched, you know, most of, if not all of the Seahawks games at one point or another this season. But that defense, it was like that, the Seahawks defense we've been seeing all year and in even in the playoffs, just turned up to 11. You know, they were hitting that much harder. They were going that much faster. And, you know, when you look at a defense like that, you know, regardless of what Peyton Manning has accomplished this year and how great of a quarterback he is, I mean, those 11 guys against any one man, you know, when you've got that one quarterback that kind of leads that offense, you know, you have to go with those 11 guys every time. And you know, looking at this Seahawks team as a whole, not just on defense, you know, they're not going to come into any, like, serious salary cap kind of issues until next season, until 2015. So, you know, I'm just looking at this team and I'm like, you know, we haven't seen somebody repeat. We haven't seen anyone repeat in a long time. But this is a team that, you know, could really do it.
Got as good a chance as any of the last few years of those winners. So.
Right. I mean, because you couldn't look at the Ravens team after the offseason that they had, you know, in this past offseason and all the changes and be like, yeah, this team's going to go back to the Super Bowl. You're like, nah, probably not. But there's not going to be a lot of roster turnover in Seattle. So,
no, not at least not guys that are going to have an impact. And I think this is very, very deep team across the board. I mean, look how deep they are. I mean, even with losses, when you saw guys like Browner, losing guys like Browner, it didn't really matter. It didn't matter for them. They had enough depth on their secondary to really kind of make up for it along their defensive line. They had the depth. And I think, again, they just, you know, picking up guys like Bennett, I mean, you know, for nothing, basically, and able to sort of turn him into a player in that defense, I think it just goes to show you that they really are smart about the way they approach the draft and scouting. And obviously, you know, Pete Carroll's hand in really making this defense what it is. I mean, people forget that he made his bones, you know, as a secondary coach and really – he's built these guys the way he wanted to do that. And that was something that he really stressed, you know, in the media, that he, you know, along with John Schneider, wanted to really build this monster the way they wanted to do that. And he wasn't able to do that in other incarnations as a head coach in the NFL. now coming back after being at USC, he kind of had a new vision of what he wanted to do, and he was able to do that. You know, it was, in a way, you know, sort of a money ball approach. He was able to build a defense on the cheap, and also by lucking out, if you will, and it was lucking out, let's be honest about it, with Russell Wilson. Because their quarterback situation, you know, prior to that was a mess, and they continually kept whiffing at quarterback until they kind of found Wilson, who made sense for them and what they wanted to do. You know, I kind of explained this on our last podcast, on our Two Mugs podcast. They did remind me a lot of the early Patriots teams, where Tom Brady didn't do a hell of a lot, but they had enough. They had enough guys at wide receiver, not big-time name guys, you know, but guys that were reliable, and that's exactly what we saw, you know, on the Super Bowl with the Seattle receivers, you know, with Doug Baldwin and Golden Tate. We saw these guys making catches when it mattered on third down.
Right.
And really being clutch in that, you know, sense. Not these big trees were, you know, really capitalizing in the red zone and stretching the field, but guys were making plays when it mattered and having a dominant, you know, in-your-face kind of defense. And it reminds me a lot of the early Patriot teams. And I think that's really where, you know, it's sort of like the early Patriot teams, but like ramped up, like as you said, Andrea, 2-11, you know, in a sense. And I think that's what this Seattle Seahawks team is that this otherworld-like defense and just enough on offense where you're not making mistakes and you're doing just enough to keep defenses on their toes. You know, it's a good recipe, and it could, of course, get better, you know, as hopefully as Percy Harvin continues to stay healthy and continues to develop in this offense. I think they really could be, you know, somebody that could be a dynasty, you know, for win maybe, you know, two or three more championships.
Absolutely. I mean, Percy Harvin, you know, he made such an impact in the Super Bowl and you know, the 40 snaps or so that he managed to play in the regular season. If they have him for an entire season, I mean, then that offense just all of a sudden becomes this new, different, and more dangerous thing.
Absolutely.
And the thing that really impresses me, you know, with Russell Wilson is just he seems so ready, and he seems so, you know, he seems so ready. He seemed so intelligent about everything. You know, after they won the NFC Championship game, like the first thing he did was he went up to Terry Bradshaw and asked him, you know, point blank, what does it take to win one of these games? What does it take to win the Super Bowl? And Terry told him, you know, just act like it's any other game, treat it like any other week. You know, there's going to be all kinds of weird stuff going on, but when you're preparing and practicing, prepare and practice like you've done the entire season, because if you throw something off, it's going to change things. It's going to change the experience for you. And I just thought it was so impressive to me that, you know, Russell Wilson sought out Terry Bradshaw, and before they could even interview him about winning the game, going to the Super Bowl, that he needed to know, you know, what does it take? And I think that's a great mindset for a quarterback, especially a young quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, and here's the thing, and I know this, people get really kind of, you know, depending on who you're talking to, just kind of laugh at that, some of that sort of approach by some young quarterbacks, because they find it kind of corny and everything else. But the reality is that the players that become great in this league work harder than everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, they might have the ability, the natural ability, but the ones who are really great really work at it. You know,
tireless workers. And exactly. That's the same across other sports too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, in Wilson's case, we watched him in that game in the Super Bowl, and he did a lot of the same things. We saw a similar thing. Like, in any time, you know, he had pressure, he kind of spun out and ran the opposite direction and changed direction across field and was able to extend the play, yet they couldn't stop him. You know, he was able to continue to do those things, and we know that, you know, his natural instincts still helped him, even though he's, you know, smarter and getting better in that aspect of the game. And he'll continue to get better. And as they surround him with more components, and I think some of those guys will stick around. You know, Golden Tate could probably end up leaving in free agency, and I think that's fine for them, even if they lose him, because I think, you know, guys like, you know, Baldwin, Curse are still very much cheap, you know, really good options for them in that offense, where they could still add a wide receiver via free agency or in the draft and keep building. With Harvin, they got the tight ends. They still have a running game. Even if somebody like Lynch, if they don't decide that, before his contract is up, that maybe they want to trade him and get something in return, they still have Robert Turbin, Christine Michael. I really, really love, guys. I think he's an unbelievable running back that once he gets his opportunity, you're going to see how explosive he can be. They don't miss a beat. They're already set up for that potential loss. They're a team that's better set up than most teams right now in the NFL that if they lose player X, they've already got player Y to take his place. And I think really how teams, continue to be successful. I mean, we've seen the other teams in the NFL continue to do that. They don't have this net loss where they can't overcome that. They're able to kind of just continue on. They have the depth and they keep on keeping on and, they don't miss a beat. And I think that's a recipe really for success in the NFL.
Yeah, they're one of those lucky teams that gets to go to the draft with
and gets to have fun.
Yeah, it's just, pick up whoever makes the most sense there. It's like the opposite of desperate drafting.
Yeah, it's like the Cincinnati Bengals are kind of like that for me this year. They don't really have a lot that they need to grab in the draft. They can just kind of get best player available and whoever fits their scheme and all that. But I'm glad that my Super Bowl pick of Bengals Seahawks was inaccurate because I do not want to see Andy Dalton facing that.
Yeah, I mean, look, there are a lot of teams that right now are really still on that precipice of being, really great. As you said, the Bengals are set up. I mean, they could continue to be really good, even with losses of somebody like Mike Zimmer, going to Minnesota. I still think they're a team that is set up to do well. And the teams that have the coaching staff in place and have the talent on defense. They could lose Michael Johnson, but it wouldn't really matter because they still have guys that could step up and take his place, and they'll develop guys that will come in and take his place. And I think that's really that recipe to continue to be good. And it's exciting. I mean, that's why it's for me, and you guys know too, it's the NFL doesn't really sleep. We continue thinking about it, year long, and we're getting ready for the combine, and then after that the NFL draft, and before you know it, we're at mini camp, and then it all starts all over again. So it's just fun for me at this point to be looking at what's to happen now in free agency and everything else, and who's going to stay here, who's going to go there, and it never really sleeps, really.
Never. As evidence of this, there was an announcement about the upcoming season and what's going to be on TV. So we got the Thursday night football games, and so the first eight of the season are going to be on CBS, and then the second eight are going to be on the NFL Network, and there's also going to be two Saturday night games on the NFL Network. So we've got all the football everywhere. What do you think? Are you excited about getting some of these games on CBS and having some Saturday night football coming back?
Yeah, I mean, why not? I think look, I liked the Thursday night football. I was a Mayock, fan. I like the way he called games. I know he's not going to be back. It'll be
feel.
Yeah, feel seems and and that's fine. Look, in the end, it's football. We're there to watch the action in the game, and sometimes you can kind of drown out some of the meandering thoughts of Phil Simms. But I think the reality is that it's good for the game to have primetime games on Thursday night. It's probably going to destroy anything else in its wake. I think it's bad for any show that's on at that time because it's going to pretty much destroy it. So I think it's good. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's going to be on TV or NFL Network or whatever. It's still going to do really well, and it's good for the game to grow the game and everything else. But it's exciting. I mean, look, if you told me there'd be football on, 5 days a week, I'd be excited. So to have it at this rate is great. So And it doesn't matter who's really calling it. I mean, I think ultimately maybe a light bulb will go on with the league and they'll try to move some things around where we really have an optimum, you know, crew calling games.
Yeah, I mean, if it's the one game of the day, you know, you might as well have the best.
Yeah, I mean, you can go back and forth and say, I like this guy from this team and that guy from this team and kind of put things together, but I don't think that'll ever happen.
Oh, no.
It's almost like, to compare it, guys, it's almost like, you know, when you hear a band and nobody else has heard of them, and you're like, oh, you guys, this band's so awesome, and then all of a sudden they, you know, everybody starts to hear them, and they release some, like, pop song, you know, like, crossover song. You're like, oh, they sold out. I hate them. And then that's kind of how it is. It's like, you really, if you like this crew that really is not getting any kind of credit, and all of a sudden they become the crew that everybody listens to, you don't really start to, you kind of lose something with that. I think it's just, it's kind of a weird hipster kind of thing.
Yeah.
you know, it really is. I mean, I think about that. There's some younger, you know, guys in the booth that, not younger, but guys that are still kind of new to it that I think are much better at this than some of the national guys. And it's, you know, it is what it is. I mean, people get used to something. We get kind of comfortable, you know, the whole, the Al Michaels, John Madden thing, and then just became, you know, Michaels and, you know, Collinsworth, and it changes, and people kind of get used to certain things, and that's fine, you know what I mean? Because, like I said, when it really comes down to is the football. You know, we watch it because we want to see exciting games, and sometimes you drown out or maybe you make fun of some of the things that they say. You know, maybe John Gruden says something absurd or whatever. That's fine. I mean, that's really, it's all window dressing anyway, because the reality is that we're watching it for the football anyway.
The only thing that I'm concerned with is, you know, working with the AFC North, and maybe there's a week where I don't have any days off because I've got the Thursday night game, I've got a Saturday night game, I've got a Sunday game, and I've got the Monday night game throughout these four teams. So hopefully, like, the scheduling gods will shine fondly upon me.
hopefully.
Another sort of media related thing. So, you know, Ryan Clark's not the first one to talk about this. It kind of got brought up during Super Bowl week. Commissioner Roger Goodell was asked about potential medical marijuana use in the NFL. You know, obviously with the Seahawks and the Broncos coming from states with legal recreational marijuana. And Ryan Clark, Steelers safety, you know, he said today, you know, that he, you know, he knows of a number of his teammates, you know, on the Steelers who smoke weed. You know, they do it recreationally. They do it to manage pain. They do it to manage stress. And a lot of guys in the league do it. You know, you have some people calling for just, you know, forget testing for weed. Who cares? It's not effective. They don't do it that often anyway, unless you're in the tier testing program anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, I personally, I'm for it just because of, you know, the high incidence of painkiller addiction that comes out of a sport, you know, like football and, you know, pro wrestling, for example. It takes many lives. You know, I think that things that don't, like even acetaminophen, for example, you know, wreaks havoc on your liver. Right. So if you're just taking a bunch of Tylenol to manage your high ankle sprain, you're putting yourself at risk. Do you think the league should ease up? I think the league should ease up.
Yeah, I think it's – look, I think what happens is right now is we're seeing states, state by state, we're seeing the legalization of marijuana. We're seeing states, you know, make these leaps and voting on allowing this, you know, dispensaries and so forth. So as that happens, that becomes more prevalent. I think it kind of holds some of these, you know, professional, you know, sporting – you know, associations or whatever, holds their foot to the fire and makes them have to say, look, when are you going to really come to the realization that this isn't that big a thing?
Right.
And it's really, it is a natural painkiller. Like you said, it is actually less of a gateway drug than actually, some of the prescribed painkillers that are out there. If you know, I don't know if you guys have ever had Vicodin before, if you've had surgery or whatever, but that's way more addictive than marijuana.
Never, you know, after a surgery.
Yeah, I mean, if you, yeah, exactly. I mean, I but I have. I mean, I had surgery, and I've taken, and boy, it. I tell you, if you didn't, there's a reason they only give you so many of those.
Yeah.
Because they don't want you to get addicted, and they know how addictive it is, and that's the thing. Some drugs are incredibly especially painkillers, are such a gateway drug. You hear about a lot of people, famous people who start with, you know, painkillers, and then they get into harder drugs. You never hear somebody like Tommy Chong talking about having a Vicodin addiction. Tommy Chong smokes a shitload of weed, excuse me, and he's fine. Tommy Chong looks better now with his snowy white hair and his Santa Claus beard than he ever did back in the 70s. So good for him. But I think, you know, we really need to kind of loosen up some of those restraints a little bit about, you know, marijuana, because I think it really is kind of silly. I mean, I think, you know, we're going to get to the point where we're going to look back and say, why were we such prudes about this? And, you know, just go rent Reefer Madness on Netflix and watch how absurd that is. I mean, it's just really funny to me because there's so many other things that you can get involved in that are so bad for you. Alcohol is way more damaging than marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all do it every day and we don't care. And it's awesome. We go out and we have our drink cocktails and all that. And nobody thinks twice about that. And they get behind the wheel and all that. But, you know, it's just silly to me. And he's got a point. You know, Ryan Clark's got a point. I think pain management is better utilized, you know, via marijuana than it is than something else, because I think there are going to be more guys who are going to have drug problems beyond football getting hooked on painkillers than they would if they utilize marijuana for, you know, what we like to call PRN, as needed, you know, pain killing drugs, basically.
What, you know, and what kind of, you know, struck me about Commissioner Goodell's comments about it is that he's only open to exploring it further if there's evidence that it helps with concussion treatment. And he's missing the point here. I mean,
it's supposed to hurt.
You know, it's like he's kind of missing the point here. So even though, you know, there are already so many, you know, studies that prove, you know, how it helps with pain management and so on, that's not even what he'd consider allowing it being used for in the NFL. It's not Richard Sherman's high ankle sprain. It's, you know, Austin Colley's concussion or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's weird that he's just taking such a narrow view of what he would. Oh, well, let's tie this into concussions, you know, like let's.
Right.
Like that's the only safety we really care about. Who cares about all the pills this guy's taking because his back's out, you know?
Well, he's just on concussion PR craze. I mean, he's been on that for a couple of years.
The greatest out for the NFL is studies. You know, when they use in air quotes studies.
Yes, studies.
The studies that they've heard also believe that the word redskin is offensive.
Right.
To people of Native American descent. So I mean, you know, whatever. I think that's just kind of the bottom line is really what matters to the NFL. And look, as much as they say they care about this and that and the other thing, what they mostly care about is the bottom line. They're still not, you know, being taxed like they should be. They're making billions of dollars every year. I mean, we love the NFL. We love to watch the product. We love the game. But the reality is that it's a bunch of billionaires getting more and more wealthy, you know, every year. So, you know, the reality is that they are looking at how that will affect their bottom line if they allow people within that umbrella to smoke marijuana freely and they go out and say, yes, it's just a painkiller, then they're going to lose some puritanical fans who think it's bad.
Right.
And that's why they're putting, you know, we're going to look into it, you know, and check it out. And then hopefully they'll hope that it'll die on the vine, that they won't have to explore it further. Because they really don't want to say, well, yeah, sure, it's okay. Well, you can treat your high ankle sprain by getting high. You know
right.
what I'm saying? And they don't want to say that because right. The reality is it's probably a good thing. Because, again, anything else is probably more damaging to you. As you said, certain painkillers are bad for your liver. It's true. And are far more addicting. So it's just funny to me that though they have to jump through these hoops because it's really, again, it's the bottom line. It's public relations, really.
Yeah, and I'm sure that we'll hear more from Ryan Clark on this subject, only because he's about to hit free agency, and I don't think any team's going to be signing him, and he's just going to walk right into ESPN and
he's awesome.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He really is. I mean, the first time I watched him, and I saw him on NFL Network, and I thought, man, this guy's just such a natural. And some guys are. They just waltz right in. They consume the room, and he's just one of those guys. He just takes over, really. So he's great.
So before I let you go, just a little bit of draft talk, just some basic, it's February 6th. So obviously we've got a number of months till May 8th, when hopefully it will be warm. That's why I'm really looking forward to the draft, because that'll be potentially the warm time of year starts.
Nice. Yeah.
So I just want to talk a little bit about, some of the quarterbacks, because, obviously when it's the nascent days of draft talk, it generally a lot of the attention is turned towards the quarterbacks and the guys who could potentially go in the first round. And I've seen just so many different opinions and so many dissension. You've got guys who love Blake Bortles. You have guys saying, earlier in this week that the Texans are totally going to take Blake Bortles first overall. And then you've got, well, no, they're going to take Johnny Manziel first overall. And then, of course, you've got Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy. And where is he going to end up? Is he as good? Is he the number one draft pick? Is he number four to the Browns? And then, of course, you've got guys like Carr and Taj Boyd. And I've saw people saying, oh, no, Taj Boyd's like third, fourth, fifth round,
Mm-hmm.
Where are you at with these quarterbacks on February 6th?
Well, here's the thing. Look, first of all, quarterback is the hardest position to really scout.
Yeah.
You can watch, cut up after cut up, on Draft Breakdown or any other site, and really come away not really completely convinced that anybody is really the consensus number one at quarterback. I think the one guy, when I watched Andrew Luck at Stanford, I knew he was the guy.
Right.
Watching him, it's rare. I mean, year by year, you looking at last year with Geno, I just didn't see that class as being, anybody really jumping up. EJ Manuel, none of them really jumped off the page. They all had flaws. They all did things, mechanically that were weird, and they made bad decisions. And you saw that, and you thought, these guys all need work. And I'm not gonna say that this year isn't much different, really. I think it's kind of more of a carbon copy of last year. I think Teddy Bridgewater is still the best, most technically sound quarterback. He's not the most physically gifted in terms of, his build. He's kind of a slender guy. He doesn't have big shoulders. He's not going to impress you in a workout by the way he looks. He's kind of a skinny kid.
Mm-hmm.
But he makes all the throws. Makes unbelievable, smart decisions. He does everything right. He's a really smart quarterback. I mean, to really kind of compare him to somebody, he has maybe the brain of Chad Pennington. Okay.
Okay.
But maybe has the arm of, say, somebody like, it's really, maybe he's a little bit like, he's not as mobile, but maybe, can do things that maybe Aaron Rodgers can do. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
When you put those two things together, but you look at his body and you say, well, maybe he's not physically as gifted as some of the other quarterbacks we've seen come out. And that's kind of where the, front offices will get hung up on him at quarterback with that, because say, well, can he hold up 16 games in the NFL? Because the game speeds up, he's going to get hit more. He might get stuck with a team that doesn't have a great offensive line, and will he get knocked around a lot?
Yeah.
The same questions are for Johnny Manziel, who is very, very different.
Right.
Johnny Manziel is the great improviser. He's really, I think, a step above somebody like Robert Griffin, where Robert Griffin was, this great track star / quarterback who could do things with his feet, but was also very kind of a lean player and not a really big, you know, prototype. So we knew that if he was going to extend plays with his feet, there's a chance that he was going to get hurt. And we've seen that so far in his very young career. We've seen him get knocked around a little bit. You worry about that with Manziel. But Manziel, to me, this is kind of an interesting, because I made this comparison to somebody today, because they were talking about, well, what about somebody like Blake Bortles versus Johnny Manziel? Okay, this is how I look at Bortles. He's not a perfect specimen because he does some things that I don't love that he still needs to work on. You know, his feet, his placement, and he does have a big strong arm. He does look more the part, which is kind of a sketchy thing to say, because so did Blaine Gabbert, quote unquote, because a guy can look the part and not be the part. But he does do things that I think transcends him over somebody like Gabbert, where he does stick throws, he does have a good arm, and he does make some excellent throws that you could see that he's that clay, okay? Mm-hmm. He's a guy that you could develop, you know? And with somebody like Manziel, he's clay, okay? He's the same clay, but he's dropped on top of a Roomba vacuum. Okay, and he's running all over the place, bumping into shit, and you don't know what he's gonna do. And I think that's kind of what teams are afraid of, and also enamored with, because you think this is a guy that's gonna light people up. They're gonna love to go out and see Johnny Football go off,
yeah,
because he could conceivably, and he could also get creamed,
yeah.
He's not a big guy. He's very slight. He's also not tall either. Teddy's still significantly taller than Johnny. So I think, you know, he's a guy that, you know, you worry about the beating that he could take, you know, if he freelances too much. But you also don't want to try to put a glass case around that.
No.
You know, you don't want to try to keep him in the box, because that's the last thing you want to do with Johnny Manziel. You want him.
That's not why you draft him.
No.
And you're dumb, if that's what you try to do to him.
Exactly. And I think, look, I said to somebody asked me today, you know, who you want. Actually, our buddy Nick Costos, Nick,
yeah,
your fellow
Nick.
Bleacher Report and SiriusXM, he said, do you want Teddy or do you want Johnny Football? I said, well, let me put it in a reality versus fantasy perspective for you. Reality, I want Teddy, because I want to be able to build, and I trust Teddy's skill set. For fantasy, I want Johnny Manziel, because I know he's going to probably run for close to 100 yards a game, and maybe he'll throw one or two touchdowns a game. For fantasy, that's great.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he'll hold up, but I think that he's exciting in that sense, that that's the guy that you really want for your fantasy team. So, you know, that may drive people crazy in a front office, because why is he doing that? This play was supposed to be this, and now he's improvising. And, you know, Ben Roethlisberger is accused of that, but Ben Roethlisberger is also gigantic.
Huge, yeah.
Yeah.
So he can
get hit, and it's not as big of a deal.
And Ben Roethlisberger has also been injured a lot too.
Right.
Even though he's that big, he's also
two
taken
seasons.
A lot of,
two yeah. seasons of 16 games. This was one of them, and they went 8-8. So it doesn't even matter how often Roethlisberger gets hurt or doesn't.
Exactly, and that's the thing. But he has the size.
Yeah.
To be able to take some of that punishment, even with really bad blocking and you know, fractured offensive lines.
If he was much smaller, he would be hurt way more often.
Yeah. So, you know, for Manziel, that's what you look at. So you run down the line, somebody like Derek Carr, who, you know, I like as well. I think he's better than his brother, because people think about David Carr and they like, ooh, and they think of Derek Carr and they get a little nervous. But I think he's a better all-around athlete. I think he's somebody that can develop better down the line. And if he gets into the right situation, we'll be successful. So I do like him more in that sense. But the guy I like, and you know, people aren't talking about, and he's coming off of a torn ACL, is Zach Mettenberger.
Yeah, someone's going to get some value in him.
He's just a big-arm quarterback, a little bit of a bonehead off the field. But I think his stuff is really something that you could manage and, you know, get with the right team and learn. Somebody's going to get a huge value, like you said, and be able to develop him. Because, he makes some throws that you're like, wow, he's the prototype. You know, he's the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not he'll stick throws. He's not a shrinking violet. He's not going to – I said this when I remember when Mike Mayock was pounding the table for Blaine Gabbert. And I thought, what in the hell is he looking at? Because I see a guy that anytime they rush two, not even three or four, they rush two guys up the gut. And you see Blaine Gabbert like crouch down, and like throw the ball at his like receiver's back just to get the ball out of his hands. I'm like, this guy is terrified. He's gonna stink at the next level. And sure enough,
he's terrified and he stinks.
He stinks. So, and it just, you know, when you see that, you want to at least know that a guy will stand there and be able to take a shot. And Teddy Bridgewater will do that, even though he's not a big guy. And Johnny Manziel will do that, too, even though he's not a big guy. You want to know that that quarterback's going to be able to take his lumps, get up. You know, you see that with Andrew Luck. I mean, Andrew Luck gets beat on. That offensive line is terrible. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He takes a lot of sacks.
He takes a lot of shot, and he pops right back up, and he smacks the defender on the butt, saying, "Hey, good shot," because he's tough, he's big enough, he's strong enough, he can handle it.
Yeah.
And that's good. And that's a guy that is resilient. He's not going to flinch. He's going to go right back in there, right under the center, take another snap, and try to stick the next throw. That's what you want. And I think, you know, I'm still looking at this quarterback class. It's the hardest thing to really, you know, come away with saying, I like player X, player, you know, Y, whatever, for this reason, because you have to keep watching. You have to, as a new video comes up, you have to watch another one and really try to really come up with some kind of idea of what you think about them, because it really is a process. I don't start looking at these guys until, you know, after our NFL season's over, and for fantasy, I'm getting ready for dynasty drafts and everything, and I want to know what guys I should be drafting. And for me, you know, I'm coming away with, is this guy going to score points? Is this guy going to actually be able to win a job? You know, is in year one, or are they going to make him sit? Because in training camp, he's going to look like a bozo and, you know, throw the ball all over the field and not really stick throws. That, you know, is that going to show its head? And I think that, you know, you have to look with a really open mind and really trust your own eyes and understand what you're watching, and hopefully, you know, you'll come away with something good. So, but I think this is a very, very interesting class. I think, you know, I do like Jimmy Garoppolo too, out of Eastern Illinois. I think he has some, and he's done some things too in the Shrine Game and in the Senior Bowl to really help stock a little bit. I still want to watch more on him. I think he has some Tony Romo in his game, and I think that's a good thing. But also, you know, there might be, I'm seeing some tiny bits of Blaine Gabbert too, and hopefully that's not something that, you know, perseverates through his game. Hopefully that's something that's just here and there. So I don't know. It's quarterback is a process. You really have to watch these guys over and over again, hopefully come away with the right feeling.
What's interesting to me is, AJ McCarron. So he opted not to go to the Senior Bowl. He might not even throw at the Combine. Mm-hmm. Is this going to be a guy who's going to be firing his agent on the second day of the draft because he hasn't been picked yet? Because his agent was like, no, you're good enough. You don't have to throw for them. When he's a guy who has so many questions about his arm, and then he's not throwing, and it just raises the questions.
I heard that he might hold himself out of the draft, too.
No. He's not going to throw at the draft, okay?
Yeah, he's going to be. He's going to wait for the supplemental draft.
Yeah, exactly. He's totally waiting for the supplemental.
Yeah. He's no Josh Gordon. But look, I think that he's making a huge mistake. I think, you know, you could say that, you know, it helps some guys to sort of erase some of what people might think about you. But the last memory we had of him was in the bowl game, and not looking very good.
Right.
And I think that's really the lasting memory that people have. I mean, they can look at his tape. His tape is a guy who's essentially a game manager that's really been in an offense that's been predicated on the run. And occasionally he'll take shots downfield. And sometimes he can make some great throws downfield. He has some really good deep accuracy sometimes. And again, it's just too inconsistent, though, to really say, I want this guy as my starting quarterback. He's a guy that's still going to be chosen later to develop and hopefully become a good backup in the league. I don't know that he's an NFL starter, mind you. I think that we've seen enough to know that quarterbacks, and I hate to say this as a sort of bias, but quarterbacks that come out of Alabama don't necessarily, you know, set the league on fire.
Right. Because they don't need to. That's not what they were in Alabama to do.
Nick Saban is historically drafted guys who are smart. Okay? And A.J. McCarron's smart. You know, and guys that don't, you know, don't give the game away. They don't turn the ball over. They're smart enough to, you know, to keep things moving and really manage the offense. And I think, you know, that's who he is. And I think, you know, if he's smart, he'll go and compete. He'll do the things that he needs to do and impress enough front offices that they'll draft him. Because right now he's at a point where he's going to be drafted in the later rounds. And by doing this sort of song and dance with front offices, he's letting them know, I think I'm better than everybody else a little bit. And I don't have to do this. And that tells you more about a guy than if he sat there and talked to you and really kind of changed your opinion of him. Because right now, their opinion is that this kid thinks, you know, he's God's gift. And I think that's a bad thing, unfortunately. I think because all of what we've seen on tape, we've seen the most recent memory is that he was pretty inaccurate. And I think he needs to dispel that. If you can go in, look, if you want to win the Spandex Olympics, then good for you, because at least you'll help yourself a little bit, because you're going to sit down and interview with people, and they see that you can throw with guys that you don't know in the combine, and with some accuracy. Then look, like, well, you know, he's got a pretty good deep ball, and this and that, and his size is okay, and you know, he seems like a good smart kid, and did well in the Wonderlic, and blah 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 blah, and all this stuff. They'll take a shot at you, and it might be a few rounds earlier than expected, but right now he's just kind of confirming that people, you know, the consensus is that this kid thinks he's better than he is, and that might make him fall a little bit in the draft. And I think that's bad. I think that's, you know, go out there, compete, and show that at least you want to make that effort, even if you fall flat on your face. They know what you are. They've seen the tape already. If you go out there and compete, they at least know that you're going to try to get better. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. That's just kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah. But, you know, because then you're not really...
If you know that you're the top quarterback or you're going to be the number one overall pick, you know you've done all the things in college. It's quite
right.
Obvious.
There's no question, no reason.
With
no question on what you can do, and then, you know, then any slight misstep at the combine or wherever is going to be ripped apart by the media and everybody. So, you know, in those situations, I think... You know, that makes sense. But for a guy that's got questions, I mean, he should be out there trying to prove those the doubters wrong, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but now, but then you got a guy, then you got Jimmy Garoppolo, who benefits the most from all this because he got to be in the Shrine Game and the Senior Bowl. And now, you know, he's the name that's on people's minds, and he's probably going to end up getting drafted before, you know, McCarron, quite possibly, because
right.
We've actually seen him, you know, in not his familiar situation, in an uncomfortable situation, working with new guys and an NFL coaching staff, whereas, you know, McCarron is pulling a Geno Smith, and he might get Geno Smith, you know?
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, even more so, really.
Yeah.
I think he'll fall even further than Geno. At least
yeah.
Geno went in the second round. But you're absolutely right. I think guys, the fact that Mettenberger's, you know, recovering from an injury and that McCarron is sort of pulling the prima donna card, I think that helped Jimmy Garoppolo because he's, you know, he was played at a lesser school. I mean, think about it. Alabama, LSU versus Eastern Illinois.
Yep.
I mean, you know, and he's really helped his stock quite a bit. For the people that say that draft stock is a myth, that's nonsense. It's not a myth. When you're a bubble guy and that people aren't sure about you and you go out there and you compete in the All-Star games and you do something at practice.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, and I hate to sound like, you know, not practice, not a game, not practice. but when you go out there all week and you impress coaches with the way you handle things and you handle the terminology and you pick things up, that's when they care. That's when somebody
right.
like Gus Bradley says, you know, I like this Jimmy Garoppolo kid. Maybe I'll let people go crazy for these quarterbacks. Maybe we'll make a push for Clowney, and then maybe we'll get Jimmy Garoppolo later. Maybe that something like that happens.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, they benefit from that. These they're gonna be, you know, talking to these coaches. They're gonna be really getting input from them, what they're looking for, and that's really gonna help them. And I think, you know, again, it can only hurt you if they had already had doubts about you.
Yeah.
If they had no doubts about you, then it doesn't matter. But if they had some doubts, you got to disprove them, like you said. So.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure McCarron's going to end up firing his agent. There's he's not going to be happy with what happens on the weekend of May 8th.
Exactly.
I don't think so. Well, thanks for joining us this week, Johnny. We really appreciate you having the time to join us.
Outstanding, as always.
Thank you, guys. And it's always fun to be here with you guys. It's a totally different vibe here than anything else. It's, you know, you guys keep it light and fun and interesting and different. And it's always, and I hate to say this word, treat, because I sound a little silly saying that, but it is. It's a treat coming here and
talking. Well, the profiteroles are a literal treat. So
they are. They're so delicious.
Oh, and if you need something to wash down the profiteroles, be sure to stop by the espresso bar.
There you go. That's right next to the triple fountain, yum.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, before we let you go, let our wonderful listeners here at the F-Ball Podcast know where they can find you around the interwebs and so forth.
Yeah, you can find me at 2mugsfantasyfootball.com. Our Twitter address is at 2mugsff. You can follow my buddy Ryan Forbes at Ryfo18 and me at RunForJohnny on Twitter as well. Thank you so much.
Excellent. Well, thanks again for joining us this week. And, of course, we'll be doing it again. We'll have more draft talk as it becomes more appropriate. Or, you know, free agency talk. That's always fun, too.
Awesome. Can't wait, guys.
Cool. Thanks for joining us.
Stay warm, man.
All right. Have a good one.
All right. And a big thanks again to Rumford Johnny from Two Mugs Fantasy Football for joining us here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast this week.
Absolutely.
It's always quite a pleasure.
An honor and a pleasure.
Indeed. So that wraps up this week's episode of the F-Ball NFL Podcast. Just a little housekeeping note. We might be on we might do Thursdays, we might do Wednesdays. We're going to kind of bounce back and forth probably between the two here during the off season, then get back to our regular Wednesday schedule as we get closer to the season. And of course, you know, that Wednesday before the draft and things like that. So just keep in mind, sometimes Wednesday, sometimes Thursdays.
The silence is deafening.
So before we go here, of course, it's time for the customary reading from the Book of Bradshaw. It's Only a Game, the memoir by that guy who helped Russell Wilson win the Super Bowl, Terry Bradshaw.
Lay it on us.
All right. I needed a job. Terry O'Neill tried to help me. One of the tools most broadcasters use to help them identify players is called a spotting board. Basically, it's a piece of cardboard on which each broadcaster writes down in a color code the players' names and numbers in their positions. It showed me a spotting board Dick Vermeil, the former head coach, had made when he was working as a commentator. He had written down, very neatly, in 7 different colors, all the information he possibly would need during the broadcast. He had every player in his proper position, their backups, everybody's size, weight, age, and college, bits of information about them, their mother's maiden name, credit card numbers, what kind of car they drove, where they bought their socks, their bank balance. I mean, he had covered everything. Now, the spotting board I prepared was probably a little less complete. I included the players' names and numbers, and by the time the first half was over, mine was in 4 colors: black ink, brown mustard, red ketchup, and blotchy soda-colored stains. But my board had something Vermeil's didn't. A big hole in the middle where I rolled over it with my chair. That board was no use to me at all. I didn't know how to use it or when to refer to it, so at the end of the first quarter, I just threw it on the floor and forgot all about it. When Vern Lundquist pointed out that for a lot of young players, this game would either make or break their careers, I think I identified with them completely when I replied, "A lot of these kids are very close to making it. They've got butterflies. I had butterflies my first night out, so I'm nervous, and I'm sure they're nervous, and they're perspiring heavily, and all wondering, hoping, praying, please let me have a great game tonight." So that was Terry Bradshaw's first foray into broadcasting a game. He ran over his board, and it had a hole in it. So that wraps up things here at the F-Ball NFL podcast for this first week without football. We are something like 200.
Oh, stop that.
208, 205, something like that. 205, 206 days away from the start of the next NFL season. So keep that in mind, people. We've got a lot of time here. In the meantime, the NFL season doesn't really stop for those of us fortunate to work in the media that covers it. And therefore, here's where you can find my work. You can find me at BleacherReport.com. Just search my name. Go on Google, Andrew Hanks, Bleacher Report, whatever. You can find all my AFC North stuff that way. It's super easy. Got to call them out pretty much every day. You can also find me on Twitter at FBall_Andrea. That's FBALL_Andrea. And, of course, I am contributing to Pro Football Focus Fantasy even in the off season. So look for me there at, of course, ProFootballFocus.com.
And I'm Brian, as always.
As always, he remains Brian.
I remain Brian, and outside of the F-Ball Studios, the elegant F-Ball Studios here.
Yes, with our chaise lounge made out of profiteroles.
I can be found on the Twitters at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
All right, well, that does it for this week at the F-Ball NFL podcast. Again, thanks again to Rumford Johnny for joining us and for all of you out there for listening. We'll be back next week to talk more football because that's what we do.
That's right.
Have a lovely week until then.
Alrighty.